Blog Talk Radio.
That was Paul Anka, You Are My Destiny, because the people that run my network decided I needed music. And You Are My Destiny is dedicated to the memory of my sister, Marcia Joyce, who loved that song and loved Paul Anka. So I guess we're going to be listening to him once in a while. And this is Fran Lewis talking to you from freezing upstate Westchester, New York, where it's minus 14 degrees and sunny. But by the time I get done on the show today, you're going to have such a great time. This book and this author are going to be so fantastic. You're going to laugh your way through it and warm up. The title of the book is Shalom, and it means hello, goodbye, and peace. And authors Stephen Enner and Dennis Wooten penned this wild, successful political thriller. They started with Aloha in 2001 about a gay American president who brokers a deal to sell Hawaii to China to pay off the national debt and raise $13 trillion. I think that is so cool. Little did I envision that the book would become so popular and create a trilogy. So unfortunately, Stephen couldn't be here today, but Dennis is here, and we're going to talk about Shalom. So hello, everybody. Hi, Dennis. How are you?
Hi. Hi, how are you?
Surprised that they played music. I had no idea. But
at least it was good music.
Yeah, I love Paul Anka, and I love Barry Manilow. I really wanted them to play the song that my dad used to sing to my mom, which was Embraceable You by Billie Holiday, but I love Paul Anka. I wasn't going to play rap now. So it's hot where you are and beautiful, and here we're freezing. But let's tell readers a little bit about the first two books. Aloha, you saw the first one is Aloha, then it was Adios, then it's Goodbye. How come one title?
Well, when we wrote the first book, we didn't really expect that there would be other books. And it was just kind of something fun to do. And since the first book's idea, kind of dealt with this whole financial crisis that the country is facing, and I came up with this idea of selling the Hawaiian Islands. So it was kind of aloha because of Hawaii, and it's like goodbye to the Hawaiian Islands, and so it just made sense. And then after that, as we got into additional books, I decided just to take the whole title, Aloha, and kind of go with it through the whole series.
That's interesting. But just thought of aloha, then adios. So what was the premise for that one?
The first thing happened is my partner, Steve, he says, well, that was fun. We're all done. I said, no, Steve, we're not done. Political thrillers, they have to be trilogies, you know. Advice and Consent wasn't just one book. You have to, we have to do three. And so it was kind of fun, and we went on from there. And in Adios, we deal with Al-Qaeda working with drug cartels in Mexico to sneak dirty bombs and terrorists across the borders. And so since the focus was on these drug cartels and this collaboration with them, had a Hispanic heroine trying to get across the border, so Adios was a good title.
Yeah, it is a good title. And then, of course, Goodbye. That's beside the point.
Yeah, I had to keep with the titles. At that point, we certainly didn't want to change the whole title strategy.
So tell everybody, how did you come up with the plot for Shalom?
Well, we had finished the trilogy, the first three books, and we were, kind of thinking we were done. And then I told my partner, I said, I've really got a great idea for a story for the next book. And he says, no, Dan, I'm all done, and I don't want to do any more. And I said, okay, I'll just do it myself. And he says, you can't do it yourself. It'll be a brochure instead of a book. So he says, tell me the idea, but I'm not committing to it. And then when I told him the idea, he says, okay, I got to do it. So that's how we got into it. And the whole idea is that we're dealing with the idea of the whole escalation of the Israeli-Iran conflict and tension and the U.S.'s reluctance to get into any more foreign wars. And we kind of go off of that. And so my thinking was probably, maybe the only way that the U.S. populace would be behind a foreign war in any near term would be if one of our own states was attacked. And so that's how I got into an idea of, well, maybe what we do is make Israel the 50th U.S. state.
I thought that was so cool.
A little out of the box, but you know.
I thought that was so cool. Sorry, I wish they would do that. That is so cool.
Yeah, well, it was, it was certainly not what most people expected, but it's fun.
Most people would not even agree with that, but who cares?
Well, in most of our books, we have a lot of issues that people won't agree with, we kind of like shaking it up a little bit.
Well, one of the questions that was sent to me that I sort of changed around is, how do you two work together on the books? Who plays what role? And when you co-author a book, do you actually act out the scenes to see how they sound or talk out the scenes?
No, what we do is I kind of come up generally with the idea of the book and the characters and the plot. And then Steve will take that and he will just run with it. And he will go off in different directions, and he'll write the entire book. And when he writes it, it's just a mind dump. He doesn't punctuate, no grammar, getting it all down on paper. And then I do all the editing, and I come up with the title, and I come up with the ideas and the design for the covers.
That is great.
So it's a nice separation of duties.
Well, when you edit the book, then, if you see things that need to be changed or storylines that you don't like, do you guys change it or do you leave it the way it is?
No, if I see something that's really, that I think is, doesn't work, or it's not realistic, or I just don't like it, then, then we'll generally talk it through and come up with some other idea or something, and we will change it. So, it's a collaborative process, but we don't have a lot of things that, that we argue on about it, that's for sure.
That's great. So how do you get people to resist? I understand that you have developed quite a following, and in fact that you have a couple of folks must-read lists for summer. How did this happen, and how did you get people to hear about this book, besides with Randy, who's a great publisher? She's amazing.
Yeah, she is, and she's a lot of help. And she got us hooked up with Cyrus Webb.
I was on there too. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, and he just kind of fell in love with the books, and he actually encouraged us to keep writing. Right? I mean, he says, "Oh, Dan, you gotta keep doing this. You gotta continue the series." And he does a list of must read books, and
oh wow,
he's put us on the list, and so. We've got a lot of push from his help.
Yeah, I was on there when the first edition of my magazine came out, MJ Magazine, which is for anyone that wants to give articles, writing tips, book reviews, anything on issues, controversial issues, anything that you want to air your opinion about. The magazine carries it all, has everything. So they did a magazine launch on his show. It was really exciting. So I got to, you know, talk about MJ and my sister and the memory of my sister and why I created the magazine. I'm going to have to contact him about one of my horror books. Maybe I get it on the best read list. You never know.
Yeah, he's really nice to deal with.
Yeah.
You know, I think you would find him, you know, very, very helpful.
So in this particular novel, there's Mac Foster. If someone were to interview Mac Foster, he ran for president. How come you decided to have him run against Chelsea Clinton? I thought that was so fantastic. I'm sorry.
Well,
that was
again,
cool.
We're just, you know, we're kind of blown down the sacred walls and everything here, and it was a way. You know, it was a way that we end up getting Chelsea Clinton down the road into the Secretary of State position.
Yeah,
that
was funny.
The same position her mother held. But I don't think it's a much of a reach, really, if you think about Chelsea. I mean, with the Clinton machine and the Obama machine, there's a lot of talk right now of Hillary being unstoppable in the 2016 election, and I think Chelsea has even indicated that she might go into politics at one time. So I don't think we went far afield there. We'll see, but I don't think we went too far afield.
No, probably not. That would really be amazing if she followed in her parents' footsteps. She's smart enough to do it.
Well, it seems like we're getting to a point where just a few families are controlling the presidency.
And I'm wondering if that's good or not. I'm really wondering if we need somebody else, different kind of opinions. I know Obama can't run again, but I don't know if there's anybody that's close to him that would run again.
I don't know, but you know it is getting pretty funny from a historical perspective, I guess. And you know, you even have Jeb Bush out there as a possible candidate. Although Laura Bush doesn't want him to run, so who knows? You know, but the whole idea is we kind of have fun with a lot of this, you know. And we try to make sure that we don't put any of these real people, we don't display them in any negative light.
No, you don't. You definitely don't. Not her and not Rose Kennedy. That was really interesting, too. Now,
yeah, I wanted to bring the Kennedys into it.
I know. That's hilarious. But I was hoping Mac would stick around a little bit more. So who is Greta, and how did they rope him into deciding to run for president of the United States?
Well, you know, they took we took this idea that this whole partisan politics thing. And so what we tried to do was pull somebody that had kind of walked away from it, had been part of it, but then walked away from it. And had another life, so to speak, and by having somebody that was part of a one party's administration and then run under another party's ticket, you know, we were, and that was the whole thing with Chelsea coming on as Secretary of State and Rose becoming, you know, the Vice President. And you know, here's the Kennedy Democrat. You couldn't go much further, you know, partisan as far as, you know, Democrats to have, you know, Rose Kennedy Schlossberg on the Republican ticket. But it was our attempt to kind of deal with the entire partisan politics issue that we face nowadays in the country.
Well, if you could define Mac Foster in any light, is he a combination of more than one president, or is he just unique on his own?
I think he's unique on his own. I mean, we looked at him as being this intellectual, but pragmatic individual, and someone that had, you know, a personality, you know, successful teacher, at, you know, and yet had been part of politics and now wanted to change the way we do things. And we thought bringing about his disability early on allowed us to move Rose into that key position in kind of in a way where she would be, you know, not feared by Iran and thought that we would be, you know, somebody that can be pushed around easily with her as president, and we wanted to discourage that. And so, you know, that's kind of where we had fun with it. The whole idea, our decision process always comes down to is, you know, what's kind of outrageous and what's kind of fun.
Yeah, that was kind of outrageous. But you didn't need permission to use Chelsea Clinton or Rose Westbrook? You didn't have to ask permission of the families? You could just write about them?
Well, we didn't, and I believe they're, you know, the whole idea is that they're very public figures. So as long as you deal with a fiction, and we're not dealing with an biography, and the fact that we're showing them all in very positive lights, I don't think we would have any problems.
Well, when Chelsea ran against Mac, what did they differ on? What issues did they differ on?
Well, they had a lot of the same leanings, but I think it was more the whole isolationism that we see the country developing, and they had some. They had some disagreements there. And then I think, you know, it was – we didn't deal with it a lot in the book as far as, you know, a long campaign and noting the differences much. You know, it was really kind of a vehicle to show her in public politics and in the public spotlight and then have – her become part of the administration, which again was started to deal with this whole partisan politics issue.
Well, why did Mac, what was his relationship with the Prime Minister of Israel? And when he called the Prime Minister of Israel, why did he come?
Well, the whole idea was the Prime Minister of Israel really didn't have any other way home. In the book we show the whole nuclear program for Israel just kind of getting run into the ground from an economic standpoint. You know, too much money spent elsewhere. No improvement in the technology. No maintenance. And so when all of a sudden they're faced with this real threat, they discover that they really don't have anything to depend on, and they're out there on their own. So if they ran into someone like Iran, who really was willing to start a nuclear war, then they were in, you know, they were just standing there by themselves without the nuclear threat that they had to protect themselves for all these years. And so while they reluctantly accepted, they accepted statehood because of the protection that the United States can offer.
I wonder what would happen if that really happened. That would be really interesting.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they wouldn't make a mistake, but...
I wonder if Palestine would say, okay, maybe it's enough already, we can get along, but I doubt that's ever going to happen. It's never going to be totally settled over there.
No, it's you know.
It's sad.
Yeah, it is.
It is really sad because they're two beautiful countries, and it's really too bad that they can't make peace finally, if not to teach their children peace, which is really sad in the world, too, because there's so many terrorist organizations out there teaching their kids to hate that it's really sad. It's pathetic. And you try not to teach kids how to hate, and these kids blow themselves up, and they pretend to be martyrs, and they're really not. They're just dead because people are, you know, brainwashing them into do that. That's really pathetic, awful. I guess it's always going to be like that.
Well, it's a tough situation, that's for sure, and there isn't an easy solution. We kind of felt that the country is so tired of foreign wars that it would take something very, very dramatic for the populace of the United States to, you know, support another foreign war. And so my idea was that, you know, really, what would it take? And my idea was, well, it would almost take one of our states being attacked. And, you know, I said, well, maybe if, and then I found this, the letter that Truman approved the State of Israel. Mm-hmm. And it's an actual document that I show in the book. And and he actually writes in there that he approved the establishment of the State of Israel. So I was using that play on words, that those words exactly, that he was, maybe what he really meant was making Israel a state of the United States.
So, well, I still think that would be really great because they're smart, they're clever, they know how to get the job done, and they're not afraid. And their army's the best. Maybe they would get, you know, you never know. Anyway, my next question is, if I could put my glasses on, my nephew is autistic. And he goes to a special school for children. He's four. So why did you decide to hone in on autism and the research? What research did you do about this particular area before writing it? Because that's a near and dear topic to me.
Well, as it is to me. I have two grandchildren, and they both suffer with autism.
Okay.
And so I had a personal stake just like you. And it was a way for us, me more than Steve, but it was a way for us to get the statistics out there.
Yeah, you did.
Let people know that, you know, this is one in 88 now. And you know, at some point, as a country and as a world community, aren't we going to start to say that, hey, this is an epidemic and we need to do something with it? And so that was the whole motivating factor in there. I wanted to get this message out a little bit. And you know, and it's as you know, it's a terrible thing, and it's different in every case. But we wanted to get something out there that kind of start focusing on what the incident rate is. And one of my pet peeves is I hear from time to time people say, well, it's not that the autism rate has increased, it's that we have better diagnostics. And I say to that, well, okay, if that's true, what you're telling me is that it was 1 in 88 20 years ago, we just didn't know it. And so I'm saying, assuming that's true, it's still not acceptable. Isn't that too high a rate for anybody to accept, you know, less than 1 in 100 children every time, you know, every 100 births is going to be an autistic birth? It just doesn't make sense. So that was a personal issue that I wanted to get out there too.
Well, you created a situation that was very interesting with the research center that's in the book too.
Right, right.
In order to find out, in order to find a cure for autism, and it's too bad that it's just fiction, some of this stuff, because it would really be great if somebody could find a cure for autism. And my mom died of Alzheimer's, and that's not going to happen either, unfortunately. That's more deadly than this one.
Right.
Yeah, autism is tough, and kids, adults too, that have to deal with it, and there are different types of autism also.
Yes.
Yeah, Chris CW, I call him CW. He's pretty smart, and he can, you know, he converses, and he doesn't bang his head, but he doesn't always, you know, focus on everything. But he
right.
goes to a special school, and I noticed since he's been going there that his speech and understanding is so much better. And he'll even get on the phone, and he'll go, "Hi, Aunt Fanny, what's going on?" And I'll go, like, "CW, where are you going?" He says, "I'm going to big boy school. I promise to be good."
And oh, that's great.
Yeah, he's good. He's learning. He's learning, can do the alphabet and letters. He likes to draw. So hopefully someday, you know, he'll learn to read. And he's got the right parents, because his mother is the treasurer of one of the school systems up here. So it does help to have somebody in the system itself. Otherwise, I'm not sure if they would have accepted him in this particular school, which is
yeah,
really
you need
sad.
An advocate.
Yeah.
You need an advocate.
And
you know,
she is, and then she's got me, because I'm an educator, and I know the ropes too. But I said to her, "This is what you need to do," and she did. Yeah, you need somebody to fight for you, and you need somebody to fight to the point that you're not going to stop until you win.
Yeah, and my son has had to actually hire an advocate to help deal with the school system and make sure that he gets what they're entitled to, you know, by law.
Yeah, special. But he was diagnosed. He was lucky because he went to a preschool, and they picked it up right away. And the preschool suggested to my niece that she goes, you know, to get him tested, and they did. And she got him into Easter Seals, and it's phenomenal. And Valhalla, they're great. So,
yeah, my grandchildren
were
diagnosed very early, too. And so they had... they had behavior training and stuff very early on, very intensive. And my grandson struggles a little bit more, but my granddaughter's doing very well. And and they're working at grade level, and they're both very articulate, and they talk, and they're both very social. So we're blessed in that regard.
You sure are. So what type of character is Mac? And if he was president today, which would really be cool, how would things be different? How do you think he would run our country that would not be the same as all the other people that ran our country? And some of them did a good job, and some of them should have been replaced after the first month. But you can't
yeah,
do that.
What we believe is that with an administration that clearly had more of a bipartisan approach to politics and where the power was more shared in the presidency, that more would get done, you know, and that's the issue. You see in the books wherever there's issues that need to be decided upon by the Congress and so forth. Things get done. They get taken care of. And so, it's just, and we think that he was somebody that wouldn't abide partisan politics in any manner.
Mm.
And was willing to put his administration out there and show that he would act the way he believed. So to us, that's what was the real difference.
Well, some of the plot, we know, is over the top. Some of it looks like it came out of the headlines, and you managed to balance them. But there are other characters in the book that we should talk about, and there's a character by the name of Aaron. Why was he blind to his wife?
Oh, yeah.
That was really good. I figured her out right away, okay? I don't want to tell you I'm really good at this, but, oh, my God, yeah. Now he's really like, whoa, okay, how could you be so blind?
Yeah, he, well, you know, again, it was kind of overplaying yeah. the character a little, you know, and having fun with it, and, you know, with the whole sex thing.
That was good.
Yeah. And I think between, you know, between the sex and his own, you know, frustration at work and mm-hmm. with the entire nuclear program kind of just running downhill mm-hmm. and his frustration with not being able to get anyone to listen, and then having this wife who seemed so supportive of him, you know, mm-hmm. I think it's and I'm not so sure it wouldn't go that way in the real world. I mean,
yeah,
I think it just might.
I
think you can get pretty. You can believe people who are supportive with you and tell you the things you need to hear and comfort you a lot. And maybe you don't challenge. You know, don't think of them as being something other than what they appear to be.
I know some people are very naive and some people are very insecure and some people actually want to believe that somebody cares about them. But you wouldn't think that a wife would do what she did, but she was really good at what she did. And she was
she was clearly a wife in name only.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, she really had an agenda and that was all he was to her.
Well, how come no one when the nuclear plant would listen to him, no matter what he did, and he gave her all this confidential information, and he went to talk to them about the nuclear thing, how come nobody, it was like he wasn't even there. It was almost as if, okay, yeah, whatever, I'm on, and, you know, we'll see you whenever. How come nobody would pay attention to him? And then, of course, they found out they should have paid attention to him, or maybe they didn't.
Well, you know, it's when you have something that you never use, but it costs you a lot of money, you tend not to want to continue to put money into it.
Uh-huh.
Especially if you believe just the idea that you have it is enough to act as a deterrent to everyone.
Mm.
And so it's always, you know, it's always, well, where are we going to spend the money? Well, we need it here. We need it there. And certainly what you said earlier about the Israeli forces being admired, you know, around the world for their efficiency and their bravery and so forth. And that's all that they've needed in most cases to solve their problems. And it's worked very, very well for them. So, you know, we're just, and plus, you know, we needed it to go that way, right? I mean, otherwise there would be no reason for Israel to become a part of the United States.
I really think that would be so cool. I definitely think that any country that really wants to be protected should become a state in the United States, and, you know, they won't be sorry. What can I say? The people here are great. They just don't give us a chance to prove it or get to know us better. They just think, you know, well, this word capitalism, but we really, there's some of us that are actually not like that. So let's get back to this research center that was doing this research on autism.
Yes.
On young children. That was scary.
Yes. And we wanted this unethical.
It was.
Diabolical almost process. And yet, out of the process, you know, good comes. But there was, you know, sacrifices that were made. And in the real world, of course, no one would authorize or make those sacrifices. But many people would gladly accept the outcome if they didn't know the sacrifices were being made. And
mm-hmm.
so, you know, that's just how we decided to deal with it. Rather than, and again, it was good versus evil and end justifies the means. And again, you saw politically how they kind of accepted the good news. And, you know, there was a little outcry, but, you know, good news kind of tends to downplay it.
Yeah, it did. I'm surprised that some of these people signed the agreement to go through with this, to allow this to happen. And yet when the bad things happened, they sort of said, well, it was expected because we were told it could happen. So it's almost like going for surgery and the doctor says, well, you could be dead at the end of the operation, but if you don't have it, you're going to be dead anyway. So it doesn't really matter. That this was frightening.
And I think there really are people out there that would take a risk.
I think you're right. If it means that their child could, benefit, or that an adult could benefit from it. Well, there are a lot of research studies out there that they ask people, to come in and they pay them to take all this medicine to see if it works. Not in a million years would I do that. But there are people there that actually, give blood. They want an out-of-body experience. I read one. That was even scarier because the author actually went through it. And that was frightening. And they go through all these different studies for Alzheimer's and cancer and autism and everything. And they would actually take medication or do some kind of testing or whatever in order to cure a disease or to find out what causes it. It's scary.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there are quite a few, even though we would think, oh, nobody would do that. I think a few people would do it.
They would, because if they're going to get paid to do it, I get emails from Google, to talk about Alzheimer's, since my mom died of Alzheimer's and my sister died of a traumatic brain injury. So I get all these Google alerts and stuff, and some of them are actually for clinical studies in different hospitals asking for people to come in and take these drugs. And you're taking a chance because you don't know if this drug is going to work adversely or not. I mean, there was one study a couple of years ago in Canada that they used this an Alzheimer drug, and the man said that it worked. And then when the study was done, it didn't work, and he got the Alzheimer's back. Supposedly, it was the first time that he was ever able to remember. My mom took Aricept and Amanda, and it did nothing. Once her memory was gone, it just declined. I don't know if there's anything out there, maybe there will be in about 20 years, that'll stop it. I don't think they ever could cure it. I don't think there's going to be a cure for Alzheimer's. I don't think there could be a cure for Alzheimer's. Maybe we get something lucky that they could figure out, okay, you have it. Okay, I'm going to give you a shot. You're not going to have it anymore.
Well, it's the same thing as, I'm a diabetic, and sometimes I wonder if they were able to create a cure.
I don't know if they
would
want
they?
To.
Would they? When you think about how much money the pharmaceutical companies make on diabetes, I mean, that right there pretty much tells you, it's almost impossible for a cure to come about because nobody's going to want that cash cow to go away.
Well, it depends. I mean, with a disease like Alzheimer's, they come up with a cure. They come up with a pill. Person has to take it forever. Because without taking it, they're not going to make it. So that would be a lot of money. They would make tons of money then. Less people would be dying, and the pharmaceutical company would come up with this magnificent drug. They would make millions. They would be, applauded and, oh, my God, accolades. But the person that has the disease is never going to be done with it. The medicine.
Yeah, but what if it was a one-time? What if it was a one-time?
One-time pill that cured you. Wouldn't that be nice? But that's,
would
that
it
would
happen
be,
then? And
well,
it
depends on how much it is. Yeah, maybe it'll be cost you like $5 million to your insurance company, or maybe they won't cover it, which happens too.
Yep.
One of those drugs, well, if you want the drug, we're not going to cover it, or your copay is $10,000. I mean, I take one thing. I take Nexium, I have acid reflux. And I went yesterday, and I said, okay, how much is it? And it was a ton. For 90 pills, it was $168. Whereas a different insurance company that I had before, but whatever happened, was much less for the same 90 pills. And then I went to, you look up on the pharmacy, by the way, there is like RX Relief, and there's a whole bunch of free drug prescription cards that you can download on the computer and just take them into a pharmacy. So I said, well, if I took this into the pharmacy, how much would it be? $900 is the price. It would have been $772 with a discount prescription card. You don't need you don't need a prescription for it. You just can go in and get it. I mean, oh my God.
Yeah, no, it's
a fortune.
Right.
Yeah. It's great. That's why I stay thin and I don't want to have a cholesterol problem because I don't want to be tied to the pharmacy. I mean, acid reflux you can't help. And eventually sometimes it gets better so you don't always have to take the pills. But my God, it's difficult when you have something like diabetes or you have autism or you have anything else that you have to take pills for every single day. So you wrote a whole lot of information on statehood. Where did you learn about statehood to get into
that,
the 50th
state? Yeah, that we pretty much we researched on the Internet. And it was amazing because we found that, you know, the process is not that defined.
Yeah.
It's, you would expect that something like a state joining the union would be very structured. It would have to be this, and, you know, this is the only way that it could be done. And it was surprising to see that there was actually, you know, some options out there on how it got done, you know. So that was kind of interesting. We didn't expect that when we were starting down that road.
Well, I wonder what would really happen if a foreign country really wanted to become part of the United States. That would be interesting. What other steps you might have to take other than just the normal steps?
Yeah, and. So, you know, of course, you know, there have to be an overriding reason for why would we accept it, right?
Yeah.
Regardless of what their own situation was. But
in
the case of Israel, there is such a history of U.S. support and Israel being our ally that it just seemed to be a great way to, you know, bring them together.
Well, there were so many countries that would like us not to be an ally of Israel, like them not to be with us either. I mean, they would like to just put a rift, and let's hope that never happens. So why was the president, all right, well, the president of Iran is, he still is. Why did they hate Israel?
Well, I mean, it's a historical thing, yeah, for sure. You know, it's been going on for thousands of years. It's the whole conflict over territory. It's the conflict of the religions, and so, you know, it's like what you see right now in the Middle East. You know, there's just no love, you know, for the Israelis there. And it's only their own strength that has allowed them to exist. And to be honest, I think the support that the U.S. lends.
Yeah, I think so too. So what are some of the messages you would like to convey in this novel? We have about 10 more minutes.
With the whole series, what we like to, you know, like to think we've conveyed a little bit is a little out of the box thinking, approaching some of these things from a different viewpoint, let's get to as close as we can to an end of partisan politics. Clearly, we've thought of that. We've tried to tear down the walls, you know, regarding gay marriage and try to get focus on serious diseases that, you know, that are personal issues and for us and mostly have a little fun with the books, you know. You can't believe how many people I've had tell me, oh God, I love that whole idea of selling the Hawaii. I mean, I love to go to Hawaii, don't get me wrong, but what a great idea. And
historically, Kennedy as president, as vice president, that was really good too. She's interesting.
Yeah. Especially with a Republican administration, right?
Yeah,
You know. So. And that's why we approach it this way, because nobody would come up and propose that the Kennedys would become Republican supporters, right? I mean,
That was so far-fetched and out of the box. I go like, excuse me?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, my God. But, you know, let me make a couple of announcements before I forget and they, you know, yell at me, whatever.
Sure.
Okay. First of all, next week I'm taking the week off because I decided I needed rest. The week after, I've got a fantastic double show. It's going to be very powerful. On February 6th at 4, the author of Devil in a Hole, the Don List Murders, Charles Salzberg, we're going to be talking about him and John List. We're going to also be talking to a lady that wrote with a prisoner that's in a Texas prison, The Unvarnished Truth About the Prison Journey, Prison Family's Journey. That should be quite compelling. The week after, I've got, from what Barnes & Noble and Amazon tell me, the number one mystery thriller author, Beyond Justice, Joshua Graham. And on February 20th, I'm sort of like nervous but not really excited. The author of Mandiba, the A to Z, the 26 Faces of Nelson Mandela. Danny Schechter is going to be on the show, and we're going to talk about his book. That is going to be totally exciting. March is going to be Women's History Month, and we've got Colin Eggers, Tess Garrison, Marcia Cook, Dr. Maxine Thompson, and the counterculture diva that I interviewed last week, Dolores DeLuce. That's just some of what's coming up. In May, we've got Ryan Freeman, and we have Larry Thompson, and I'm waiting, and MJ Rose, believe it or not. So that's what's coming up next, and I have to say thank you to several people before I continue. I want to say thank you to the people at Go Greenleaf for the great smoothies and for the great support and understanding that I can only have things that are soft and that are healthy. And they're a new place in Central Avenue, and they're really great. And thank you once again to my friends at Twins Deli and Central Plaza Diner for making stuff that's not hard and smooth that I could eat and pureeing it for me, even in the restaurant. So those are my thank yous for this month. I always tell everybody I put them in my magazine, which is MJ Magazine, and the third edition. I'm putting it to bed on Tuesday. So if you have an article, people out there, for the magazine, you better email it to me in the What's My Opinion section or anything else that I've asked for. Okay, so I did it. I didn't forget. What's next for this cast of characters?
Well, we've got the next book, the fifth book of the series is Chow, and it's just been released.
Mm.
And it deals with the Vatican
and the
relationship between Rose and the cardinal who becomes Pope. And,
oh, nice.
And a terrorist who's going to try to kidnap the Pope, and so a lot of action, a lot of fun. And then the last book of the series, or at least the sixth book, is going to be Sayonara, and it's going to deal with North Korea and U.S. and Japan and their conflict and their hard feelings and what maybe really caused the earthquake and tsunami that damaged so much of Japan and the aftermath of the nuclear radiation leakage that has been having effects on the Pacific Ocean and the fishing. So
that's interesting.
We still find some things to rant and rave about.
Are you going
to
bring Mac back in any of these books, or is he done?
Well, he is, but only in a consultative role.
Okay.
And he's not back as he doesn't run for office again or anything like that.
No, he said he was going to be one.
But he is somebody
anyway.
that some of the people go to for advice.
His wife would never want to run for president either, would she?
I don't think so.
No.
I think she did her part, and
she got him,
glad
yes.
to be done.
Okay, one last question. So where can everybody learn more about you and Stephen?
We have they can go to the website, which is AlohaTrilogy.com. Mm-hmm. We also, on our business, we have a website, www.EWPartners.com. The books are available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com, and they're available in hard cover and soft cover and Kindle. So hope they go out and enjoy them.
Well, they should go out and enjoy them. And before I say shalom, adios, goodbye, and aloha, everybody should go to Amazon and click on the book and buy a couple of copies. And considering, let's see, there's a lot of good, you know, steamy scenes in this book, and Valentine's Day is coming up very soon, people. So, you know, it's a good book to read with somebody else, too, especially those particular scenes of the guy that works in the nuclear plant and his wife.
Right.
You know, maybe she's not exactly who she says she is, but those scenes are really good. They'll get you, you know, make you smile a lot too.
Exactly.
Well, I have this world sense of humor. What can I tell you? So thank you so very much, and I do hope that I get a copy of Chow. It might take me time to read it, but I will read it and review it and give it the proper 5 Chow stars.
We'll get a copy out to you today.
Thank you. And this way, maybe we could set up an interview so both authors could come on the show when it's convenient. That would be really cool, probably hilarious, too.
That would be great. We'll get one out to you right away.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I just added it to the top of my list. We'll just move it up right there. Thank you so much for the interview today. I appreciate it. I want to tell everybody, like I said, I will be back February 6th, February 13th, February 20th. There's a question mark about the 27th, and I'm really excited about Women's History Month. And I think April, we've got, like I said, MJ Rose and Larry Thompson in May, and we have a whole bunch of other authors, and Brian Freeman also, and it should be, and David Morrell, April 3rd. Whoa. It should be interesting. So, and we're going to see if we could do, maybe when I do the interview with you, we could do it in the month that we do strong male characters and great men writers. Instead of, you know, women's history, we'll make it men's history. We can
there
do that if I want. Yeah, I could do it on I have another show. It's called Chat Time. So I could do whatever I want. Thank you so much for today. I appreciate it. Everybody
out there,
stay warm. Are you guys in California? We're jealous. Send us back some heat. Those of us freezing in minus 14 degrees, don't go outside. Have a nice night, and goodbye.
Bye.